It may be safe to say that President Trump has accomplished more for the good of freedom and liberty in 1 week than in the previous 20 years. From stopping foreign funding for Planned Parenthood, placing a freeze on federal hiring, to giving the green light for the Keystone XL pipeline, good change is happening. But what about his promise in his inaugural address to eradicate radical Islamic terrorism from the face of the earth? In all reality, can he do it? And if so, how? I'm your host, Sam Rohr, asking you to join us for the next hour on Stand in the Gap Weekend.
Welcome to Stand in the Gap Weekend, the American Pastors Network Week in Review, featuring the best segments taken from our Stand in the Gap Today daily program. Our goal is to equip the pastor, church leader, and all believers to think critically and biblically in a culture that increasingly rejects truth. Stand by to hear a focused analysis of current events viewed through the lens of a biblical and constitutional worldview. The pastor's and the believer's goal should be to impact our culture for Christ. As part of our mission to urge pastors to boldly preach the whole counsel of God and equip people to be soldiers and ambassadors for Christ, we're establishing APN chapters in all 50 states. Learn more on the web at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Now, here's our host and American Pastors Network President, Sam Rohr.
Hello and welcome to this weekend's program. Perhaps this is your first time joining us. If you're a concerned Christian or a patriotic American, you've tuned in to the right station. On this broadcast, you'll hear answers from a biblical and constitutional perspective to some of the toughest and most pertinent questions people are asking. Why does the American Pastors Network address these tough issues? Issues that many in the media won't discuss. Well, it's because we know that the mission of the church, its leaders and believers alike, is not only to further the message of the gospel, but to equip believers to be articulate ambassadors for Christ in an increasingly evil and godless culture. That's why we take the time to dig deep into biblical truth in order to carefully apply it to what's happening around us. One of the most pertinent issues surrounding us is the imminent danger posed by jihadist Islam. It's a threat actually aided and abetted by the former Obama administration, but has now become center stage targeted by President Trump. To help us understand this issue, we're going to share an interview from our daily program with former FBI agent John Guandalo, president of the organization called Understanding the Threat. This group provides threat-focused strategic and operational consultation, training, and education for federal, state, local leadership, and agencies in government, the private sector, and for pastors and churches alike. Joining me during this interview is my co-host, Dr. Gary Dahl. I'll introduce the program now with a look at some of the changes underway within the new Trump administration.
We will reinforce old alliances and form new ones and unite the civilized world against radical Islamic terrorism, which we will eradicate completely from the face of the earth.
Well, in his inaugural address, President Trump said, "We will unite the world and eradicate radical Islamic terrorism completely throughout the world." Logical question, is that possible? And what does it mean? And what can we expect in really such a high-stakes engagement? Well, to help us understand this very, very important issue better, we're going to bring in today John Guandalo. He's president of UnderstandingTheThreat.com. He's a former FBI agent. He's the author of the FBI's training manual on how to understand and address radical Islam in America. And I think, ladies and gentlemen, this program is going to be filled full of very powerful content on a very critical issue that we all must understand. I'd ask you to call your friends right now. Ask them to listen in today as we address this topic in depth, beginning here in segment two. And with that, I welcome you to Stand in the Gap today, this Tuesday edition. This is Sam Rohr, and I'm going to be joined by Gary Dahl. David Kistler is away from us today. But Gary, before we get into this, really this overarching theme of Islam and what the president said about eradicating radical Islam terrorism completely throughout the world, like we do often, I want us to pick up just a couple of issues of the day and ask your some thoughts on that. You know, the president continues to fulfill his promises, issuing statements that truly, in my opinion, Gary, is turning big government on its head. And I'd like to look at just a couple of them this morning. One of them is that he signed an executive order that stating he is going to move towards slashing regulations by 75%. That's a phenomenal number. And secondly, and I want to go here first on it, is that it's very interesting that the whitehouse.gov website is in English only, Gary, at least for the moment. It may change, but it's in English only. Some people might say, well, this is harsh, and it's cruel just to have English only on the official White House government site and not Spanish, because that's really the issue. What's the Trump administration saying about this? So, Gary, I just want to ask you, what do you think about this English only on the official White House government site?
I'm glad that it's there. This is the United States of America, and of course, it's commonly recognized that in the United States of America, we speak English. Now, I'm not so sure, Sam, if English has actually been deemed the official language of the United States. I don't know that it has been, but certainly, unofficially, it is the language that we use here in the United States of America. And so I'm glad that it's there. And I think that this is all a part of what President Trump now is doing to show the whole world that we are a nation, that we want to be patriotic. We want to have a nationalism that recognizes who we are, not only to us, but the entire world. And I kind of think that having English up on that particular site is a good thing. I'm behind it. I'm in favor of it 100%.
Well, Gary, you know, actually what the president is saying and those around him, and he and the president made this clear throughout his the campaign time, because this was not something new, but he used the word assimilate. It's time to assimilate. Mm-hmm. And Gary, in reality, we've talked about it before, but the very definitions of what makes a nation is, one, a common border, and of course we know that's a major issue of the president's administration and the wall and so forth, but the other is a common language.
Correct.
So this is all about, Gary, in reality, I think, about saying we are a nation. How in the world can we be America first if we are this entity that doesn't even have the continuity of a common language? I know when I was in the House, Gary, here in Pennsylvania, I led efforts here for a while in trying to get our Commonwealth here in Pennsylvania to pass language legislation that made it official to be English only. And the support of people out there, even by those who just recently came to our country, they were in favor of it. Sure. It seems like it's only the bureaucrats and the other do-gooders that didn't want it to happen.
Well, I think, Sam, that, you know, when you go over to Acts chapter 17, verse 26, where it tells us that God himself is the one who has established nations, it says a part of that is that the phrase that is used is the bounds of their habitation. And I would think that that not only includes the geographical boundaries, but also other boundaries, including the language that is used. Hmm. And I think that that's why I say that I am glad that English is what is up on the whitehouse.gov website first. It should be there.
Yes, it is. And, well, the other thing, Gary, I'm going to shift gears on you real quick. The other thing the president said I wanted to pick out was that he had a big meeting with a lot of business leaders, and he assured them, I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, he said, I am going to work towards, we are going to slash regulations by 75% and maybe more. Gary, why? In simple terms, why is that so important?
Well, I think it's because of the fact that regulations restrict and hinder progress. You know, I remember quite well back in the days when Ronald Reagan was president and he brought in deregulation. And it was during that particular time that there was great development economically and in manufacturing and in so many other ways. Deregulation is good. Regulation is not good. There need to be certain guidelines by which industry and agriculture and everything else is governed. But in the Obama administration, there have become so many regulations that it's almost very difficult for companies, in fact, for the entire nation, to be able to move forward. I like this idea of deregulating. And if he can slash regulations by 75%, I think we're going to see this nation go forward in a greater way than it's ever gone forward, at least in our lifetime.
Well, Gary, I think you are correct, and certainly those business leaders heard it, because many of them have said, and I know from my past, there's a percentage, a larger than you would think, of nearly every business that all the employees do is just help to comply with meeting the regulations. Non-productive activity. And President Trump has said, look, we're not going to do those things that are going to make the environment dirty again. We're not going to go back. And he's correct. They don't have to go back and do that. But, Gary, the overburdening of the regulations just kind of flies right in the face of free enterprise, as far as I am concerned, and the ability for people to do what they need to do and are want to do in a free society. So, to me, that was really, really good news as well. And I think we're going to be interested to see how that works out. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to now, right after the break, we're going to bring in John Guandalo. He's the president of UnderstandingTheThreat.com, and we're going to now barrow down into this issue, the statement by the president that he is going to eradicate radical Islam completely from the face of the earth. Big statement, lots of implications. We're going to bring in John Guandalo, president of UnderstandingTheThreat.com, to help us walk through this right after we come back from the break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. We've been listening to a program from our daily broadcast originally airing on January the 24th. In response to President Trump's inaugural promise to eradicate radical Islamic terrorism from the face of the earth, we invited John Guandalo, president of Understanding the Threat, to discuss the steps necessary to follow through and deal with radical groups like ISIS, Hamas, and others. In this next section, John is going to identify what needs to happen.
Well, welcome back to Stand in the Gap today. And with that welcome, I'm also going to officially welcome in now to the program a guest we've had on before and our listeners really enjoy. That is John Guandalo. He is the president of UnderstandingTheThreat.com. John, welcome to the program today. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
John, as I announced at the beginning of the program, during the inaugural day speech, President Trump made a very bold statement. He said, quote, "We will eradicate radical Islamic terrorism completely from the face of the earth." I heard it, I rejoiced, but I thought at the same time, wow, that's a mighty bold claim that brings with it some, I think, extremely significant implications. And I'm going to ask you a question about that right after we listen to that entire statement once more, just so we get it all down. Could we just play that clip, please, Russ?
"We will seek friendship and goodwill with the nations of the world. But we do so with the understanding that it is the right of all nations to put their own interests first. We do not seek to impose our way of life on anyone, but rather to let it shine as an example. We will shine for everyone to follow. We will reinforce old alliances and form new ones, and unite the civilized world against radical Islamic terrorism, which we will eradicate completely from the face of the earth."
John, everyone who understands the danger of radical Islam that day, last Friday, heard a very clear message. But I'd have to say that so did all of those who support radical Islam, both here in the United States and around the world. So let me start here first with you, if I could. Is it even possible to completely eradicate radical Muslim terrorism from the face of the earth? Let's just start there. What do you say about that?
Well, anything is possible. I'll put that out. But what's practical and realistic? Not sure. But I want to maybe let me reframe this. Is it possible to rip out the infrastructure in Iran and crush them militarily and destroy their financial channels? Is it possible to crush the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, seize their oil wells, and so that the money they're using to fund the global jihad, which they are, that's a matter of fact and testimony before Congress and other places. Are we ready to go into Pakistan and nuclear power and hammer them? Let me remind everyone, Osama bin Laden was a mile from their military academy. And if we think that their intelligence service didn't know he was there, that we are more naive than I think I thought. Are we ready to crush Turkey, the UAE, Syria, Palestine, you know, the Hamas-held territory is what I would call it, and Yemen and all these other places? Are we willing to do that? Now, Mr. Trump may be willing to do this. But this has to be a whole-of-government approach. And one of the things I would say is, number one, yes, it's possible to destroy this enemy and break them, but we have to look at this from the perspective of how do they define defeat, not how we define it. See, we lost wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, even though our military crushed the enemy on the battlefield. How did that happen? It happened because our generals and civilian leaders made an affirmative decision not to know the enemy. So long as we decide not to know the enemy, how do you know what is going to cause them to be defeated? Well, their doctrine says, Sharia, that for them to stop waging jihad, they have to feel utterly defeated, because Allah doesn't lose a jihad, according to them. So if they keep losing and they're getting pounded, then it's not a jihad and they have to stop. And actually, if you continue doing it and you're getting pounded like that, you're considered a criminal and the Muslim community has to kill you. So if we actually understood this, it would change the dynamic. So let me get to the kind of down to the point here. If we actually unleash the American might, but not just militarily, economic warfare, that has to go along with a massive education and information campaign to the American people. I'm not really sure our allies matter. They seem to be all taking a knee, with the exception of a couple to this enemy. But the American people need to understand what's at stake. And nobody has done that since 9/11. We have not shared with them what this enemy is and how they operate. And I think if we did, the American people are smart enough that they will understand. Oh, that's why when I see this on the news, it doesn't make sense and I can't put it all together. You just put it all together for me. We could do that. Instead of spending billions of dollars to rebuild Afghanistan and Iraq, whose, you know, majority of the population wants Sharia and an Islamic state under Sharia, why don't we spend that money actually educating the American people on a real threat here? And it begins, if you want to get any of this done, with destroying and ripping apart the Muslim Brotherhood network in the United States, arresting their leaders, seizing their properties, and shutting down their organization.
And John, I want to go there in just a minute. Hold that a little bit, because I think that's a critical part. Gary, I think you had a question you want to follow up here with John, if you don't, right off.
Yes, I do. And, of course, I appreciate what John is saying. And, John, you know, I would like to add to that, just by way of a statement, that, you know, there also needs to be a spiritual and biblical component to this idea of communicating to the people of the United States of America what Islam is all about. And I know we may be talking about that later as well. But from a radical Islamist perspective, this announcement that President Trump gave the other day had to have been heard with great trepidation around the world, because I believe that President Trump meant it. He's talked about that throughout the campaign. So my question to you is, how do you see the radical Islamists around this world and the various front groups responding to that bold statement as we go forward?
Well, I want to just say I don't know what radical Islamists are, but I know what jihadis are. And I know that the jihadis around the world understand what he's saying, that he's getting ready to unleash on them in a way that they have. They're very confident in their position that they're going to win. I think that's a mistaken trust, because they have not felt the full force. You know, when we went into combat, even though we crushed the enemy on the battlefield, the rules of engagement were absurd. We didn't unleash our power and truly go out to vanquish the enemy. We went out there to win a peace instead of destroy an enemy. And we need to be willing to do things that we did in World War II. You know, I would bet you there are lawyers at the Pentagon that would think bombing Dresden now would be, you know, a war crime. But we did it to break the back of the enemy, and it did. It certainly was very helpful in breaking the back of the enemy. And these are things, you know, that we don't lose our humanity in the process, but we have to destroy the enemy. So there's a, I think there's a line there. We don't lose our soul to win a war, but we also have to be very clear that if you don't defeat the enemy, then it's not just and righteous, because you continue to put the American people, the innocent people, in jeopardy of an enemy that many of them are not aware are right here.
John, it's so refreshing. John, I'm interrupting. It's so refreshing to hear you speak as a military fellow who understands what victory is. Unless we define the enemy and go after him, we're not going to win. Now, I agree with that. Let me go back and ask you this. On this perspective here, the first step of what needs to take place here in this country, the president has said that he would move towards perhaps declaring the Muslim Brotherhood to be a terrorist organization. We've talked about it with you on this program. Last Thursday, the Faith Leaders for America, of which I'm a part and Gary's a part, actually had a press conference in D.C. where we talked about this, and we officially asked the president to declare radical Islamism, those who are promoting Sharia law and so forth, to declare them and the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization. Do you think he's going to do that? And if that does, what will that set in motion here in the United States?
Okay. Yes, I do think that's the direction he's going to go and that he's going to do that. Here's the what I just want you and your viewers to understand. The Muslim Brotherhood is already planning for that. So they are already making plans. Okay, you declare us Muslim Brotherhood. How are you going to identify our group as Muslim Brotherhood? And we have an army of lawyers that they're already assembling. So as soon as you try to designate a person or an organization as Muslim Brotherhood, they're going to tie you up in a legal battle. And they're literally creating an army of lawyers around the country right now. They're also creating new organizations at a pretty rapid rate in order to move. So let's say tomorrow we indicted the Islamic Society of North America, North American Islamic Trust, Islamic Circle of North America, the Muslim Students Association, Muslim American Society, Muslim Public Affairs Council, Council on American Islamic Relations. We indicted them all, and there's plenty of evidence to do it, and lock them up and get indictments. Then what? We've indicted an organization. Hopefully we wrap up the key leaders in that, and so we take some of them off the street, but they've already created other organizations that are going to be able to step in and take over the missions of those organizations. So we need to really have a very aggressive, comprehensive plan here domestically. And what I was saying earlier is, because if you're going to launch external operations, you've got to get rid of the friction inside the system.
And with that, John, I'm going to have to interrupt because we're going to a break. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to continue this conversation that we're on right now with the Brotherhood, but we're also going to go and look at examples of how embedded they are by going to the National Cathedral where a leading terrorist imam prayed this last Saturday morning. That's right. You heard it right.
We're glad you're listening to today's Stand in the Gap Weekend. Did you know that the American Pastors Network produces not only Stand in the Gap Today and Stand in the Gap Weekend, but also a one-minute program carried on over 200 stations nationwide called Stand in the Gap Minute? Here's the program from last week. I hope that you enjoy this important challenge. Do you believe in God? The psalmist says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the earth shows His handiwork. A beautiful sunset, a new life, a soft summer breeze." Hello, I'm Sam Rohr of the American Pastors Network with another Stand in the Gap Minute. The Bible says that the evidence is so clear that no one can honestly say that there is no God. Isn't it sad that in our God-rejecting culture, so many educated people can be so ignorant? But rejecting God doesn't eliminate Him, nor can it avoid the day we stand before Him and confess that Jesus is the Son of God. If I were to ask you if you believe in God, I hope you'd say yes. If I were to ask you why you believe in God, I trust that you could join with me and say, I believe in God not because I see Him, but like the sun, I can see because of Him. The American Pastors Network, pastors preaching the truth, equipping people to impact the culture for Christ. Visit us at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net to find out how you can help. We'll be right back in just a few moments with our discussion about the steps necessary to rid the world of radical Islamic terrorism with our guest, John Guandalo, president of Understanding the Threat. Now, if you like what you're hearing, you can tune in out to our daily broadcast every day online from 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern Time by visiting our website at standinthegapradio.com. That's standinthegapradio.com. You can also access all of our archived programs and sign up there to receive our e-news, which will give you news and information on events, programs, and opportunities for you to get involved. Just visit our website there at standinthegapradio.com and consider following us on Facebook, at Twitter, at American Pastors. Now, we also have a one-minute program called Stand in the Gap Minute, which is a daily reflection on spiritual truths designed to help you in your walk with God. All three programs, Stand in the Gap Minute, Stand in the Gap Today, and Stand in the Gap Weekend, can be found at standinthegapradio.com. Now, to get back to the program, we're going to focus on the Muslim Brotherhood here in the United States and how important it is that we understand the levels to which this terrorist organization has penetrated our government and other social, economic, and religious systems.
As we continue on the program here with the broader theme of, is it possible for Donald Trump to actually achieve the promise of eradicating completely radical Islam from the face of the earth, we are discussing this matter with John Guandalo, who is president of the group UnderstandingTheThreat.com, a leading authority on this issue, a former FBI agent and an author of the FBI manual on what to look for and how to describe what the jihadists are looking like on the ground, and plays a critical role, I think, in our history here now in this country. John, I want to go back to you now. Because just on the other side of the break, we were talking about the Muslim Brotherhood. You were, in fact, saying that if the president does declare them to be a terrorist organization, they have their strategy already in place. They're going to bring out an army of lawyers to oppose it in the courts. They're going to create dozens and scores of other front groups and just keep reshifting their face around that kind of thing. But however, is it possible to really clean out this mess in this country without the president declaring the Brotherhood a terrorist organization? Doesn't that have to start first?
It would be very helpful. It's not a showstopper. In other words, we have enough evidence to indict the organizations that I mentioned earlier and others. Mm. But those key ones, Islamic Society in North America, Muslim Student Association, Muslim American Society, Muslim Public Affairs Council, CARE, Islamic Circle of North America, and these are the prominent organizations that are pushing the agenda. There's probably evidence on the table to indict leaders of groups like the Muslim Legal Fund of America, which has become part of the tip of their spear, because that's the organization that is actually getting attorneys all over the country to build an army of lawyers that will legally challenge everything, every arrest, every legal action this president takes. So they have a strategy to deal with this. But yes, it would be helpful, but there's enough evidence on the table right now to indict those organizations as providing support, but it would be a lot easier and a lot cleaner, I think, if they're designated a terrorist organization.
Okay, well, we're hoping that that is done. And as I mentioned on the other side, the one group, Faith Leaders for American, which are faith leaders from across the country, of which we are a part. I'm a part. Gary's a part. And Dave is a part. We released information on Thursday calling for the president to do that. But immediately, right after the president did said what he said on Friday, then lo and behold, Saturday morning at the Washington Cathedral, at the National Prayer Service, lo and behold, isn't there a major Islamic leader? And I'm going to let you describe who this fellow is, but he is a dangerous practitioner, top leader of the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States. And lo and behold, he had wormed his way into the prayer service. And it really stood out like a sore thumb to anybody who was sitting there or anybody who watched it, because it just didn't make sense. But these types of folks are embedded across the country. This particular imam, Muhammad Majid, is sometimes referred to as America's imam. He has a nefarious background. Would you fill us in a little bit on this individual? Because I want to just help our listeners to understand where these types of individuals are located, and that they've really gotten themselves into prominent positions that really belie their ideological radical position.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing to me that Imam Muhammad Majid was there, but not surprising. And I think I want to be clear, my professional estimate of this, my assessment of this, is that Mr. Trump had no idea, and that it was establishment Republicans that were probably planning this event. And because Muhammad Majid is so circulated, you know, this is a guy who worked with Secretary Kerry, Secretary Clinton. His directors have worked with both Republicans and Democrats from the Islamic Society of North America. He's the outgoing, he's now no longer the president of ISNA, where he was the president and vice president. And ISNA, Islamic Society of North America, is not only the nucleus of the Muslim Brotherhood in North America, the largest terrorism financing in a Hamas trial in American history revealed that ISNA sent hundreds of thousands of dollars to Hamas leaders, actually millions, to Hamas leaders and Hamas organizations overseas. And it is a Muslim Brotherhood entity. This is a guy who sits on the Homeland Security Advisory Committee with a secret clearance. He gives briefs at CIA headquarters in Langley. He's been given awards by the FBI. Just, 2 months ago was given an award by Director Comey. So the fact that he would be there, if you're an aide to an incoming administration or you have a position, you wouldn't think twice. So the problem isn't that, you know, Donald Trump's, you know, made a mistake. This is the kind of penetration I'm talking about, that a guy like that is considered good to go within the government circles.
There
and
you go. John, I mean, what you're saying is astounding, and I will add to it just so our listeners understand, according to our information, you are correct. This had nothing to do. The choice of this man being here was not the Trump administration or anybody within it. From according to our information, it was the choice of the Archbishop there of Washington that actually set up and arranged most of that meeting there at the church. It was another quote-unquote religious leader, and I don't even know for sure if it was establishment Republicans, but it bears up the point you're talking about, John, significantly. And I didn't know that he was sitting on some of those council meetings like you're talking about. That's profound, unbelievable.
Yeah, it's much worse than that. I mean, the Adams Center in 2002 was raided by the FBI in an investigation, Operation Green Quest, that was literally the largest investigation of its kind inside the government since 9/11 to today. And of the kind of the network of financing among all these groups. And, man, we could never get the thing prosecuted. Such resistance inside the system. And, you know, I want to just say on a sidebar note, those of us who have worked in this, in the D.C. area, we have a saying about the National Cathedral. It's a place where all religions are welcome except Christianity. So its leadership
wow.
has been weak, has not defended the faith, and this was the first time, because Mr. Trump had so many very strong Christians get up and speak, but in a normal national cathedral event, it's amazing. They have these interfaith things where Christianity is sidelined. Mm. So the fact that they would work with like this is not surprising.
I was glad to see that at least somebody put on the schedule the song "Great Is Thy Faithfulness," because that did direct attention to our great God, John, and I was glad to hear that. But you know, it doesn't surprise us to see how Islam and the Muslim Brotherhood is infiltrating itself into high places. We've talked about that a lot here on our program, but I want to jump ahead a little bit and ask this question, that since this imam that we're talking about and his mosque and most mosques are actually training bases for Islamic terrorism, can you share with our listeners today how that training is taking place and what they are training to do and how it has been allowed to continue right under the noses of the United States Justice Department?
Well, let's first start with your last part of the question. How has it been allowed to happen under the noses of the DOJ? Because they are free of any clue about this threat. If you talk to the average supervisor or above, up to the previous attorney general, and ask them to define Islam, you know, I mean, Jay Johnson is the son of, he's a red diaper baby. He's the son of communists. How a guy like that got to be the attorney general is mind-boggling, but it's no wonder he would find an alliance with jihadis. But and why he would prevent his Department of Justice from teaching truth about the real threat. But the average attorney, even good people in DOJ, are clueless about this threat. So when you ask them what a mosque is, or if you were to challenge them on this, they just tell you it's just like a Muslim church. Well, it's nothing like a Muslim. If you're going to use an analogy with a mosque, the analogy you would have to use, if you want to be accurate, would be an embassy. The mosque is the center of the Muslim community. It's the place where Sharia is adjudicated. It's the place where battles are planned. It's the place where social functions are. It's the place where jihadis can reside. And it's, oh, by the way, they pray there. This is not the primary function of a mosque, is not a place of worship. Let's get that right out on the table. It's the center of the, it's like the U.S. Capitol, the White House, the Supreme Court, and a church rolled up into one, stuffed in an embassy, and draw a 3-mile circle around it, and that's ground they claim. And where does that idea come from? Well, the most perfect example of a Muslim, according to Islam, because it's in the Quran, is Muhammad. And that's what he used the first mosque in Medina for, to launch battles, to plan battles, to have weapons and water and food there. That's what it is.
John, you have been very, very, very clear. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Stand in the Gap today. Our special guest, John Guandalo. You can go to his website, understandingthethreat.com. A lot of information there, a lot of updates. I encourage you to go there, sign up for their weekly or their releases that they do regularly, and they have videos, many things that they provide and offer. Now, with that being said, when we come back after this break, we're going to continue with John, and we're going to talk about what can be done for awareness training for pastors, churches, and law enforcement.
At the American Pastors Network, we urge pastors and Christian parents to seek a Christian education for their children, not as a preference, but a conviction. Whether in homeschool or Christian school, a Christian education is essential if we ever hope to raise godly children and change the culture for Christ. That's why on this program and our Stand in the Gap Today program, we are glad to partner with BJU Press, the nation's largest provider of K-12 Christian curriculum, academically excellent, biblically sound, and historically accurate. Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works, It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com. We've just heard the clear intent of the Muslim Brotherhood and the function of the local U.S. mosques to defend, train, and equip its followers for jihad. Now we're going to bring it down to the personal level. What can you and I do about this threat? Should the church get involved, and how can the pastor be a leading voice to educate and instruct on what the biblical response to radical Islamic terrorism should be? Let's see what Gary and John have to say.
In this last segment, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to continue again with our guest, John Guandalo, on this concept of eradicating radical Islamic terrorism from the face of the earth, which was a promise that the president made in his inaugural address on Friday. Now, that being the case, being aware, which we were made aware of many things in the last two segments, I want to move into this one relative to what we can do and to help all of you understand that there are things that can be done and are efforts that are being made available. I want to start with you, Gary, first of all, because the ignorance level relative to the Islamic threat in this nation is just astounding. And I know, and you said at the beginning of the program, the pulpit plays a very critical role. So if you could just take the next minute or two, give a perspective of what the pulpit's role needs to be, and then I want to go to John, let him finish out the program with what they are doing as understanding the threat in providing much needed training and awareness across the country. Gary.
Sam, I think that's a good question, and I think that as it relates to pastors, there are at least three things that they should be doing. Number one, they need to learn about Islam. Many pastors are totally ignorant about what Islam is, and I have had other Christians from other congregations call me and say, well, why is it that my pastor does not talk about Islam? Well, it could very well be that he's ignorant of it. Secondly, I think that pastors need to become very, very familiar with what the Quran teaches. And then thirdly, I believe that it's very, very important that pastors teach the truth about Islam, because, you know, many people think, many Christians think that Allah is the same God that we follow. And of course, that is not the truth at all. And so pastors need to learn about it, become familiar with the Quran, and then teach the truth. And I just want to draw one particular illustration here from the Quran. I have before me a Quran that's entitled The Meaning of the Holy Quran. It's put out by the Amana Publications, which is the official publication, as I understand, of the Muslim Brotherhood. And in this particular Quran, they've got the English on one side, the Arabic on the other side, and then, of course, they have commentary, just like the Ryrie Study Bible. And in Surah 47:4, it says this, Therefore, when ye meet the unbelievers in the fight, smite their necks at length. And then it goes on to say, when ye have thoroughly subdued them, bind them, and so forth and so on. It goes on to say that Allah will allow you to fight in order to test you. But the interesting thing to note is that there are many people today who say that the Quran does not say that they should kill the infidel. But it does say that. And in the commentary on that Surah 47:4, it says this, When once the fight, that is jihad, is entered upon, carry it out to the utmost vigor and strike home your blows with the most vital points. Smite their necks, both literally and figuratively. You cannot wage war with kid gloves. And so you see, a lot of Christians do not realize that this is what real Islam teaches. Pastors need to understand this and teach this to their congregation, Sam.
Gary, excellent and very, very, very clear. John Gundahl, let me go to you next because you are traveling the country. You are providing a lot of help for law enforcement. You're actually providing help now for pastors and head ushers and things, people within the setting of a church. Tell us now from your perspective what Understanding the Threat is doing and can do to help people become aware and help what the Gary is saying the pulpit needs to do. But you're doing things that are critically important as well. Talk to us about that, please.
Well, first let me say I appreciate Gary's comments. That's exactly what UTT says and teaches. When we teach Islam, we teach it using materials that they teach each other, what they teach their children, what they teach newcomers, and what they teach people who've been in Islam. So we use their materials to teach law enforcement so they get an accurate understanding of what it is. But with the depth of the network, we have a very, meaning the jihadi network, the Muslim Brotherhood network, we have a very thick threat here in the United States, in all 50 states. And we've mapped out a lot of this. And so I want to say this and answer your question. We're the only organization in the country that does what we do. We take a holistic approach to the threat in each state and in each county in each state because the threat's different in each area. So we provide law enforcement with our, you know, premier program, the three-day Understanding and Investigating the Jihadi Network, which gives them a very clear understanding. And the universal response is none of the law enforcement officers we teach were aware of the information, and yet they all realize it's critical, which is why the president of the National Sheriff's Association recently wrote a letter, put his name on it, and allowed us to put it out across the country, because he said everybody in law enforcement, every citizen needs to know this, and you're the only guys doing it. The other thing we're doing specifically is we help both law enforcement and citizens map out the threat in their county, in their city. We show them how to do that. We show law enforcement how to proactively find jihadis in the community, not waiting until they act. There are investigative things you can do, and then we show them how to investigatively go after the network. And when I talked about we're the only ones comprehensively showing a state, for instance, how to deal with this, we work with governors and attorney generals on how to develop prosecutorial strategies and investigative strategies. Now, with the breadth of this network in the country, the two most important people in any community are the sheriff and pastors. Sheriffs, because they're beholden to the people, but the people have to understand the threat. You've heard me say it before on your show. If 10% of pastors would have spoken truthfully about Islam since 9/11, we would not be in the mess we're in.
Wow.
Much less if 50% or 70% had just simply explained what Islam is, we wouldn't be here because the citizenry wouldn't have tolerated it. But you have pastors telling their flocks that the wolf is just another sheep, and just let him on in, come on in, and it's no big deal. It's a lie, and it brings into question a whole bunch of things that we can't get into this minute about our pastors, but there are a lot of good men and women out there, faithful men and women. There are a lot of good pastors and priests and rabbis out there who do want to speak truth, but they're in the minority, and so what people need to do is on their own, they need to do some research, which is what UTT exists for, to provide you resources. And number two, they need to encourage their pastor to speak truth about this. And if they won't, then I'll say what I've said before. They need to grab them by the ear and kick them in the butt and tell them to go find the place to be.
I think that's pretty, John, I think that is pretty clear. Tell people right now, if they're listening, how they can contact you. If they are a church member or someone in the pulpit or a local elected official, quickly put that out there. And then if we have minutes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, so we have programs to teach churches. And we have actually, as a group decision for UTT, the team agreed to substantially reduce the cost. So essentially, for travel expenses and a love offering or a small honorarium, we will come to your church. Hopefully the goal is to pack it in. UndersandingTheThreat.com. Follow us on our YouTube channel, UTT_USA on Twitter, Facebook, Understanding the Threat, sign up for our newsletter and contact us through the website. We're looking forward to helping.
John Gundalo, thank you for being with us. And ladies and gentlemen, we normally close in prayer. We didn't have time today, but I urge you, as we will, pray for our nation, pray for the president, pray for all of those in bringing forth our pastors, all of those in bringing forth the truth.
If you were with us during this last segment, you might have heard the statement by our guest, John Gundalo, with Understanding the Threat. He said, if 10% of pastors would have spoken truthfully about Islam since 9/11, we would not be in the mess we're in. Wow. Did that strike you like it struck me? Folks, that's why we exist. The American Pastors Network exists to educate and equip pastors, church leaders, and believers alike to be prepared to navigate the troubled cultural waters. It's not easy to understand and fit the pieces together by watching or listening the liberal media. In fact, you can't. Yet for the sake of our children and grandchildren, God's people must seek to be informed and engaged on issues like this. Thank you for joining us today. Stand in the Gap Radio is a ministry production of the American Pastors Network. We hope that the information you've heard today has been helpful. If so, we hope that you'll prayerfully consider partnering with us financially. You know, one way your sacrificial gift will help us is to expand our state chapters of courageous and obedient pastors to all 50 states. Currently, we have chapters in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Tennessee, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Missouri, with over a half dozen more poised to join us this year. Now, it costs about $10,000 to launch each state chapter, so your gift of any amount will be a huge blessing. APN gives hope and encouragement to obedient pastors across America and provides a national voice for biblical authority and a biblical worldview. APN helps faithful pastors to more effectively equip their congregations. One pastor said recently, "Thank you, thank you, thank you. Your radio programs and your materials are so helpful to me because my people, many of whom are listening to your radio programs, are being challenged to study, carefully think, and then apply biblical principles to the issues of the day. God bless you." Well, wouldn't you like to be part of helping those pastors who want to stand in the gap for truth to stand more boldly and to help APN in our commitment to the equipping of the pew and the pulpit? Now, if God is going to bless America, it's going to be because the pulpit awakens and you can partner with us. Now, for your gift today of any amount, I'll send to you a powerful sermon entitled God's Roadmap for a Blessed Nation on CD. This sermon has changed the lives of thousands. For a gift of any amount, this can be yours today. It provides the biblical roadmap as God described and was then embraced by our founders in the beginning of our nation. You'll want to hear this CD. If you'd like to partner with APN in a greater way, for a gift of $250 or more, we'll send to you a beautiful leather-bound copy of the Founders Bible at $100 value. This Bible, filled with Founding Father quotes, documents, and articles, show very clearly how our Founding Fathers identified and applied biblical truths and built it into the foundation of our nation. Now, to contribute, you can call us at 610-901-3607, or you can go to our website at standinthegapradio.com and press the donate button. You can also contact us and send a check to us by addressing your check to APN at 83 West Main Street, Suite 3, Elverson, Pennsylvania, 19520. America is at a crossroads. God's people hold the key, and the pulpits of America must lead the way. Help us at the American Pastors Network to stand in the gap for truth now. We hope to hear from you this week. Until next time, stand in the gap for truth wherever you are.
Thank you for listening to Stand in the Gap Weekend, the American Pastors Network Week in Review. Our goal is to equip the pastor, church leader, and all believers to think critically and biblically in a culture that increasingly rejects truth, and to provide you with a focused analysis of current events viewed through the lens of a biblical and constitutional worldview. APN promotes the return of our nation to God through preaching, praying, and equipping Christians to reclaim the culture as soldiers and ambassadors of Christ. God hears the calls of His people who learn the truth and obey it. To partner with APN, please visit us on the web at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. You can sign up to receive regular updates, to become a prayer partner, or to help as a financial partner. You may also call us at 610-901-3607. Again, that's 610-901-3607. To listen to any of our Stand in the Gap programs, including our live daily program, go to standinthegapradio.com. That's standinthegapradio.com. Thank you for listening today, and be sure to tune in next week at this same time for Stand in the Gap Weekend, the American Pastors Network. Pastors preaching the truth, equipping their people to impact the culture for Christ.